Welcome, welcome, Svetlana.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How are you?
Good. Feeling pretty good.
Okay, you were here last time together with Davor.
Yeah.
But that was the main character in the last episode. This time you're gonna, let's say, be in front of the lens and just clarify some things that might be difficult to understand for some people. Last time I did talk a little bit about Digital Resonate, but how did you and Davor meet, and how is the company functioning now?
How is the company functioning now? Well, we've been around for 5 years. Davor and I, with two other co-founders, we founded Resonate in 2019. And the entire idea was actually to have a different approach to digital product design and digital product management, because we saw that a lot of times, actually, it is the digital product design and digital product management is not based on user research, and this is what we do. So everything we do is based and powered by user research.
Yeah, so you're mainly focused on UX. I saw on your LinkedIn profile that you were nominated for the UX Design Rewards. What's that about?
Yeah, UX design is one of the things we're doing. And yes, this nomination came as a surprise to us, and we're still hoping to win the award, but it's nevertheless, even if we're not, it's nevertheless the recognition of the work we've done in the past 5 years and absolute recognition to the entire design team, because it is a nomination for a product that we've been working on for the past 5 years in the cybersecurity space. And I think that's kind of like a really nice incentive for us to continue the path we're on.
Yeah, so 5 years, that's quite a lot. That's 5 years is quite
the first anniversary.
Yeah. What have you been working on lately?
Well, lately, I mean, our projects are pretty much kind of, you know, similar in a way. It's just that we tend to say that we are industry agnostic, meaning that we work on digital products or complex enterprise solutions in various industries. But we focus mainly, you know, on two things, that is digital product design and digital product management. But what makes us different is that everything we do during the design process or deciding on what path a digital product should take with the proper product management is based on a lot of conversation and understanding of users, of buyers of that digital product. It's predominantly in the B2B space, but those are the projects we've been working on.
Yeah, so you cover a wide spectrum of industries.
We do cover a wide spectrum of industries, but we are very much focused on, I would say, these two things, design and management, powered by research.
Yeah, right. You mentioned that you focus on buyer personas and buyers.
Okay. One of the
exactly. Areas. And today we're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. You know, how to understand your buyer persona. But before we start, what is actually buyer persona? I know it's quite obvious, mm-hmm. but what is it actually?
Yeah. I would say that it's important to have and to keep in mind is that in B2B software world, oftentimes buyer persona is not the same as a user persona. Because procuring a B2B software for a company and business processes is actually not an impulse decision. It's not an impulse purchase. It's a very deliberate decision. And it takes a lot of time for a company to decide on which product they should hire to do a job for them. And by doing that, there's like multiple roles and multiple people involved in that decision-making, process, because no matter how small or how affordable a subscription to a digital product is, it does have an impact in a company on several levels. You know, it impacts how you do business, what are your processes. Also, people need to take into account, for instance, how the new digital product integrates with the existing tech stack. You know, so that involves also other people in the decision-making process before they actually make purchase and implement a digital product. Then again, you know, budget and time-wise, nobody wants to go through the same process over and over again every year. That's why these buyer personas who are involved in this decision-making process tend not to be sometimes the users as well. That's why we need to understand what are they looking for, what are their motivation to actually hire a software solution for their business, and how to actually approach them.
Yeah, so a buyer persona would be somewhat of an ideal customer.
There is an ideal customer profile that you want to target. Mm-hmm. But the buyer persona is somebody who is spearheading the process of procurement and tends to work with other people involved on the company, on the client end, right? Who make a decision whether software A is a better solution for their business process than the software B, right?
Yeah. So a buyer persona is actually, we can say, you know, the center of your product. It's what's going to sell your product. I mean, solve an issue.
It is, to an extent, I would say. I would agree to an extent, because the buyer persona is very important. If we look at this entire product life cycle, you know, there is a period and there is a phase where you need, if you're a startup, you know, or if you're a tech company, product company, you want to sell your product. And at the very beginning of this process, you kind of need to convince the buyer persona that your product is a solution to their problems. How they inform themselves about your product is through a website, through other digital and marketing touch points. But then again, the user journey begins, you know, where we also focus our efforts and our design capabilities into designing a digital product that actually delivered the promise that buyers were able to see on the website, if you know what I mean.
So what would be, let's say, the key areas that, you know, somebody should focus on when they're building a user persona? And you know, how can somebody understand how is somebody going to buy something?
Yeah, since this is, as I said, like a high consideration purchase of procuring a B2B software, there is not a lot of, I would say, like third-party sources of information, you know. So the best way of actually figuring out what is the motivation and what is the interest of your buyer persona is actually to approach them, you know, and speak with them, you know. And this is where we come in and help our clients with, you know. We help them reach out to buyer personas to have conversations with them and understand what motivates them, you know, what has changed in their business landscape that they are actually looking for a solution from software A, right? Then what they expect from that digital solution, how would they implement it on their end, what would they, what capabilities they take into account, or what they criteria they need to kind of, what criteria you need to kind of check to actually be suitable for them, and decision and also perceived barriers. Like, what about your product is concerning them that they might even decide to go with software B and not with your product, you know? So understanding that spectrum of insights is crucial to actually align and orchestrate, I would say, three key teams within the product company who are actually working on a product. That's the product team, sales team, and the marketing team, right?
Yeah, I mean, would you say some of those areas are sometimes overlooked? I mean, are clients aware that all of them are important? I mean, they're probably, you know, when you talk to them and say, well, this part is really important, and they say, oh, I didn't know that.
They tend to be overlooked only because I would say that product companies either don't have time or, you know, in-house capabilities to conduct these researches, because it takes some time. It takes a couple of weeks, you know, to go out and speak with your buyer persona. But overlooking those insights actually then pushes you to create your value proposition about your product from the feature standpoint, if you know what I'm saying. This is what we see really a lot in the industry, you know. When you visit digital products website, you see a list of features, you see a list of awards, you see a list of, you know, what the product is about, whereas we strongly believe that how you should position your product is as a benefit or as a solution to a business problem your client has, you know. And just like turning this around or upside down, it doesn't matter, actually helps you convince the buyer persona that your product is a solution to their problems, to their business processes. And avoiding going into that understanding, I think that pushes you to kind of invest more money into sales efforts and marketing efforts, which tend to be very costly these days, and then at the end of the day, inefficient. And it can also kind of blind your product team to continue building capabilities that may not necessarily bring the biggest value to the end customer.
Yeah, because somebody might be convinced, you know, yes, this is my perfect customer that's
exactly
looking for this and that. But it might not be the case. It might be a completely different story. And I'm 100% sure that you have plenty of examples of that. You know, that somebody, in the last episode, as Dover said, you had the dental clinic where your client was in love with his product, but he wasn't aware that that product wasn't actually needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you really need to be open-minded regarding every area that we mentioned.
Yeah, and you also need to speak with different, I would say, types of buyer personas. So even when you kind of define your ideal buyer profile, ideal customer profile, then again, you still need to reach out to buyers who have left you, you know, who have churned.
Makes sense, yeah.
Those who are dormant, because they're very likely to churn. You need to understand what kind of pain points they have with you. Those who you want are great, but you need to observe their behavior with the product to see whether they are likely to churn or not. Then those buyers you have, buyer personas and buyers that you have in your sales pipeline, you know, you don't know if that will result in closing a deal or not. So they're still deliberating and still choosing between, you know, your product and someone else's product. So understanding what, you know, bothers them during this decision-making process can help you streamline your sales process, you know, can help your sales team to kind of address their concerns either faster or address them completely and help you close the deal.
It's quite interesting that, you know, you mentioned it affects the product itself,
mm-hmm.
sales and marketing. And we start from a really, really simple thing. Buyer persona, you know,
and
which can actually decide the whole, let's say, destiny of your company, where
exactly.
it's going to go. And it's not only going to affect the product itself, but you're going to build your sales strategy and marketing strategy around that.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the most important things, a really important area, is building your buyer's journey.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Well, that's actually fully understanding what happens on your potential customer's end when they are going through the process of actually choosing between you and maybe two or three other solutions in the market. Why are we making, I would say, such a big deal out of it? Let me just give a little bit of a context. First of all, that's because, you know, failing fast became super expensive. You know, money is tight and money is expensive in the market. You know, rounds are smaller, and it's difficult these days to be a successful, you know, startup and a newcomer to a software industry. The other thing is that the market is pretty saturated. It's 2024. You know, if we were be working with, you know, startups and digital products 10 years ago, their chances of succeeding in the market were pretty higher because there was not a lot of options. Today, there's a plethora of options when your buyer is actually making a decision, should I go with product A, B, C, or D? You know, you're just one of the products in the market. So understanding what happens on your customer's end, who is involved in the process, you know, it's not only the person that your sales team has a relationship with or is in conversation with, but is also that person's peers within the company. So let's assume you have an accounting software. It could be that you're speaking with the head of accounting or finance or controlling within the company, and that person is choosing the software that they need to procure for their company, right? But the person that the sales team is speaking with could be, you know, a junior accountant in the company, because that person is only tasked to gather information from the market. But that person may not necessarily be a decision maker. A decision maker could be the CFO in the company. But not only that person, who also has a say in the entire thing, could be chief IT guy, because we need to know how the accounting software kind of, you know, connects and integrates with the other tech stack within the company. And it could also be someone else within the company who has a say in this entire process. So actually understanding that and knowing that helps you build the buyer journey. You know exactly how long the consideration phase takes, the deliberation phase, you know, where they might look for a, I don't know, a free demo, or they might look for some freemium features to test the product, things like that. So you need to understand what's ahead of you in the sales process, so that you as a sales team can prepare both the product and the sales and marketing collaterals that will help you with actually convincing the buyer on the other end.
I mean, it helps you defining your target audience. And
helps you with that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But it also helps you with kind of delivering to the target audience once you get in touch with them.
Yeah. And validating and refining the journey, because the journey, you know, can change completely. Let's say if you add some different features. And I can also presume, as you mentioned, you have plenty of different roles in the company. And all those roles might not be same personalities. They might be looking for something else.
Absolutely.
So it's quite difficult to find, let's say, the sweet spot, you know, when building something.
Yeah,
like
I think that everybody's trying to find the silver bullet, and I believe it doesn't exist, you know. And the thing is that we had a case, for instance, with this client of ours who is in the cybersecurity space, you know, and the sales process takes quite amount of time, you know, for a company to decide to hire a cybersecurity software for their internal processes. What we learned with speaking with these buyer personas, we understood that the chief cybersecurity officer is not the only decision maker in the company. Why? Because since this cybersecurity, it's a cybersecurity awareness software, which means that is also a set of lessons and assessments for the employees, an HR manager has a say as well. And they're looking at completely, you know, different features and capabilities within the software. You know, they're not paying attention of how it integrates with the existing tech stack, but they're looking at the content, you know. And also, they are hesitant to, you know, hire that software and deploy it immediately in the company. They, understanding that, made us make a mini product, easily shareable demo of the product that all the stakeholders involved in the decision-making process can share within themselves, you know, in order to make a decision quicker, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, because actually going into a product where you need to set up everything, where all your dashboards are empty because you don't have the data, proprietary data, kind of, you know, makes the decision harder because it takes longer for you to see the value. So we kind of made a mini demo product that shows the value faster to all the stakeholders involved in the loop. And then that kind of, you know, speeds up the sales process, speeds up how you push your lead through the sales pipeline.
Yeah, so that managed to somehow solve the problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Building a buyer persona can be quite an abstract thing. When you start, you probably give your buyer persona name, when you might use a photo, because if you use XY, it's going to be quite difficult to visualize. So how do you create one? I mean, we talked about, you know, yeah, we just briefly talked about how you can create the user journey, but how do you exactly create the buyer persona?
The buyer persona is a profile. It's at the end of the day an abstract profile of a person, right? Giving it that profile a name or a picture is, you know, is just like something that you do at the end. But what we focus on, first of all, we kind of move away from all the demographic traits. We rarely, rarely care about how old this person is, what gender this person is, what they do in their spare time, you know, what are their hobbies. It doesn't matter. We look at them as professionals because what we, you know, projects and clients we work mostly with are B2B SaaS companies. So we are looking, what are the traits, professional traits of that decision maker, chief accountant or chief cybersecurity officer? You know, I don't care if he has a dog, you know, it doesn't matter, right? So where we focus on their personal, on their, sorry, on their professional traits, how we get them is by interviewing them. We have this proprietary methodology that's very pragmatic. Quickly, with like 8 to 10 interviews, we start to gather these insights and start seeing patterns into their motivators, into their expectations. We get insights from their decision criteria, so everything that your tool needs to tick, all the boxes, and perceived barriers. Once we see those patterns, we are able to kind of, you know, create a profile that then tells us who your buyer persona is, but also it gives us the mirror picture, understanding who is not your buyer persona. Understanding anti-persona is important because it also shifts your focus in sales and marketing. You know exactly how to qualify your leads. You know exactly where your anti-personas is, so you can pull the plug on potentially some marketing campaigns that are attracting your anti-personas, you know, so you don't waste marketing money on that. So creating these profiles is purely based on their buying and professional behavior and motivation.
I guess you have to, when creating a buyer persona, you have to be careful in structuring the questions, because what I was mm-hmm. thinking when you were talking, they might be biased in some areas if you structure the questions differently, because you might lead them to an answer that they're might not be aware of and give you a wrong answer about a certain area. that probably happens. Yeah,
That's a question we get oftentimes from our clients, is why we think that our methodology or our approach works. And we know why it works. First of all, because in this entire picture, we come as a third party, as somebody who did not, you know, build the product from scratch, or somebody who is not emotionally attached to the product. So we come as professionals, as researchers, and we approach these buyers from an important angle, and that is that we are not trying to sell them anything. We are in a listening mode.
Yeah, just asking questions.
Just asking questions, not guiding them, you know, to get, because the entire point is of not gathering insights you already know or you want to hear. You're actually probing and looking for where your product fails in the communication or in sales, and why is it not converting? That's the thing, and that's the entire point of these interviews. So we come in as professionals. We say, look, I didn't build this product. You can't hurt my feelings, and I'm not trying to sell it to you. And when you, and there's also, like, I would say a little bit of, you know, ego moment, because all these professionals really like to be invited as experts in the field, and they like to share their opinion, you know, and this is how you actually get them to open up and how you get these unbiased insights.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be really careful regarding that, because your whole research might go to just down the drain if if it's not structured properly.
Yeah, you have to be very careful about how you structure your interview and how you ask certain questions. There are some techniques how you can extract some insights without actually either sounding judgmental or without actually, you know, kind of guiding them and influencing them. But we also hear from, you know, clients asking us, yeah, but our sales team can go out and speak with our, you know, leads or with our churn customers. Yes, that's right. Or your customer success team could do that as well. There's like only two, I would say, important differences. Once your sales team approaches your potential clients or your ex-clients, they think you will try to make a sales attempt, which you want to do. Yeah. You know, that's your goal, right? And the other thing is that when they speak to a customer success or customer support, they tend to be not in the best mood. You know, they tend to be, you know, either angry with you or, you know, they might be bothered with something that doesn't work or something like that. So we are not asking them to refer to this specific product. We are asking them to refer to their need, to what they are trying to achieve with actually hiring that product.
Okay, now that you have all the info, you know, mm-hmm. the research is done, and you have all the data, how do you use that data? How do mm-hmm. you utilize, you know, all that you know and build a product?
So, you know, the qualitative data that we gather is, you know, structured. We look for patterns. We have numerous spreadsheets, you know, where we store the data. And we know exactly which insights impact or tell us what the product should do and what sales and marketing should do. And marketing in this case, we talk here about like product marketing and not brand marketing. So we're talking here how the marketing and what the marketing department or team could or should do to help sales convert more leads. And by kind of, you know, dividing these insights into feeding into product team, they know exactly how they could prioritize and reorganize their roadmap, you know, knowing what capabilities are important. And sales and marketing team can streamline and potentially even reposition the product in the market, create a new value proposition, and create new communication on the website, because that's predominantly, you know, the most important marketing and sales collateral your digital product can have is a proper website where you actually don't talk about your features, but you talk about the benefits and the needs that your buyer persona has. What you actually want to have on your website is a buyer persona quickly browsing. Nobody's reading, right? Everybody's glancing.
A few words, maybe.
So they really need to be at a glance recognizing themselves on your website and saying, oh, yeah, that's the problem I'm having. Oh, this is the solution that understands the problem that I'm having. You know, okay, I get it, because the only thing you want them to do next is to reach out to you. And then they land in the sales department, and then also the sales completely understands what's ahead of them in the buyer journey, what's ahead of them with what these buyers are looking for and how to address that in a timely manner.
Have you ever had a case where a client was, let's say, convinced in his idea, let's say, this is going to sell, mm-hmm. and then when you did the research, you said, well, it's not going to sell really, but you can, let's say, modify the product a bit and then move to a little bit a different niche and then try it there, because it's going to be much, much better. You're going to be much more successful than in the current one.
We actually had a case with a company from the US that is in the infrastructure IoT industry, and they acquired several different other solutions under a bigger umbrella of infrastructure IoT. They had a problem with actually, I would say, catering to different industries, because their suite of software solution can cater to different industries, such as, you know, dams, mines, railways, roads, bridges, these big infrastructure projects and structures. And the thing is that, you know, how their communication was based on the website is that I would say only maybe, you know, dames were able to recognize themselves. Whereas guys and geotech engineers who are in charge of paying attention to railways couldn't see the benefits of a solution that works for dams. So what we did then, we spoke with different buyers from different industries. We, of course, got a hint from our client who was telling us, you know, but my solution really works for these other infrastructure projects. And we said, okay, then let's speak with geotech engineers who are taking care of bridges, who are taking care of roads, who are taking care of railways, and see what are they looking for. And they were looking for pretty similar things, just like geotech engineers in the dams sector. So what we did is just restructure the communication a little bit, and on the website we spoke their language and opened up industry pages, because, you know, if this buyer persona is a geotech engineer from the railway sector, he's looking for a page that speaks to him. And it's easy just to create a variation of an industry page for your website.
Yeah, you just adjust a couple of features. And
you just adjust a couple of features to put front and center features that are relevant for his industry. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you cater better to him.
Yeah, I mean, I can...
It sounds like a trick, yeah. But it's actually paying attention to what matters to the buyer persona.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. You know, as we mentioned in the last episode with the Dover, you cannot fall in love with your product. Well, you might, but be ready to adjust some things, because it might not love you back. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so...
I think that founders should be in love with their products. But I think they should also...
Not blinded by love.
Exactly. And they should also, you know, be kind of, you know, objective to it and say, okay, fine, you are my product. I really want my product to succeed, but I need to let other professionals, you know, help me along the way and not be the smartest person in the room.
Okay, for sure. Okay, so how would you wrap everything up that we talked about today? What would you point out as the most important things when, you know, when building and understanding your buyer persona?
Don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, that's the thing. And don't be afraid to go out and understand this. Don't assume. Because this is something that, you know, the entire business of physical products has figured out, you know, decades ago. That's why there's like numerous research agencies out there doing panel researches, understanding the entire B2C market. We know what women want. We know what kids want. We know what Gen Z wants. We know what men want. We know what people living in this or that area want. So B2C market has completely, you know, figured that out and has been doing that for a century, you know. Somehow tech industry, you know, is discovering this entire thing, and shouldn't be afraid of doing that. You know, methodologies are out there. It's easy to speak with people. People really want to share because they're looking for your solution. They need it, right, for their business. So they also want to share insights on their end so that you can fix the product that will work for them. You know, it is a joint effort.
Yeah, it's in their interest to
it
get
is.
A better product.
It's in everybody's interest. You know, if I'm a buyer, I want to buy a solution that will work for me, you know, for my business process and everything. So if you just reach out to me and ask me what I think about it, I will share that with you.
I mean, it might be, you know, one might think, well, it's quite easy to build, you know, a buyer persona, but it's not that simple. You really have to be careful around, you know, about different areas, mm-hmm. you know, just to be sure that you're not overlooking some areas, because mm-hmm. that might cost your whole project.
I mean, it might cost you a lot of marketing and sales money.
And time. Let's not forget
absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you will be wasting a lot of marketing budget. Your sales team will be frustrated because they are aiming and targeting audience that is not potentially their actual buyer, or they don't know how to address those buyers', you know, needs. But also the one of the important things is to know that your buyers also change. You know, if you were one of the three solutions in the market 5 years ago, now you might be one of 10 solutions in the market. So circumstances change, landscape, business landscape changes. You know, we are not in the we are in the economic downturn. Let's say you have these cycles of everything, when maybe sometimes budget will be more important, when sometimes time to deployment is more important. So you kind of need to stay in touch with your buyer personas and understanding them and knowing how they change, you know. And also, just we can take like very traditional industries. Some CFOs, if I take an example of a CFO, are now like 30-something years old. They're not necessarily, you know, how you imagine potentially a CFO. It can be like a 40-year-old guy who is very tech-savvy, who is looking for different things from your software, even when you are operating in a very traditional industry, so to say.
Yeah, I always have a picture in my head. Yeah, a CFO, it's probably a guy 55 years old, you know, gray hair. And
what? He's looking for an on-premise solution?
Yeah.
It could be, and it probably is, a 40-year-old woman looking for a very, you know, digital, modern, cloud-based solution for her company, for her team. You know, so that changes as well. Your buyer persona changes as well. That could have an impact on how the decision is being made.
Right. So always be ready to adapt to the market conditions. Yeah.
Name of the game.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you
for being the guest on the roadmap. And I hope I'll see you again.
Thank you for having me.